Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Audio courtesy of our show. Hello. I was surprised. I woke up this morning. My alarm goes off at 3:10. And I looked at my phone, and the first thing on my For You was your tweet yesterday during the show about what Rodney McLeod had said, that Jimmy Haslam sits in the exit interviews. And we just played that audio of Rodney talking about Jimmy Haslam sitting in the exit interviews. And I was really surprised at the reaction that you had had from our listeners, from the people who follow you on social media. Very upset and taking that as a very bad thing about the Cleveland Browns. By the way, Cavs coming up at 7. I promise you that. Plus in about last night. Because tonight is a bigger game than maybe some of us realize for one Cavalier in particular. We'll tell you who coming up at 7 a.m. However, when Rodney was here, like I took that yesterday. I was like, okay, we could talk about that tomorrow because we had the whole hour with Rodney. And, you know, we kind of wanted to conduct our own exit interview. And then I saw the reaction go, whoa, my goodness gracious. A lot of people took that negatively tone.
They did. They said it was hearkening back to the old Haslam ways of meddling and putting
his... Is that
his,
meddlesome?
Putting his... Well, that's what we're going to get into, because I was a little surprised too, and I think nobody would have cared if you would have heard... Let's say we would have had Rodney McLeod a year ago, and he had the exact same story. Yeah, we did exit interviews. I talked to Has for 20 minutes.
Did you find that funny that he had a nickname?
Endearing, right?
That shows you that, well, he knows his veterans if he has a nickname.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, Al Davis was Mr. Davis. That's what he is. Jimmy Haslam being called Has by his veterans. I'm like, okay, he has a good rapport with his veterans. I don't know if Isaiah McGuire walked in and called him Has as a fourth-round rookie in his first year coming in last year, but... A guy like Rodney McLeod, 13 years in, yeah, over time, there is a nickname.
Now, I'm not sure if Rodney, if he told us this on the air or if it was some chit-chat off the air between breaks, but he did tell us that, you know, same thing happened in Indianapolis, but it wasn't with Ursay, it was with Ursay's daughter.
No, he said that on air.
Oh, he did say it on
he
air.
He did say it on air, yeah.
So he kind of made it sound like it's not that atypical. But obviously people will hear Ursay and they're going to think the worst too. They're going to think meddler. Even if it wasn't Ursay, then they'll think his daughter's meddling.
And it happened in Philly too, and Philly's been a pretty good organization over the last decade.
Yeah, so this was a weird one to cherry pick. Like, you just cherry pick the results. Just look at the results. Like, just look at the scoreboard if you're mad. But like I said, nobody would have cared a year ago if Haslam would have sat in on exit meetings when they went to the playoffs and they had a magical run down the stretch, right?
No, they wouldn't have cared. They probably would have liked it and said, see, he's in tune with his players. All this takes a different turn if the 14-3. Whew, that's a lot of losses. 14-3 instead of 3-14. Like last year, we didn't hear. I mean, there were people calling in last year thanking Jimmy Haslam. We had the calls thanking him. and being in tune with his players and things like that. It whether or not we like an owner just basically turns into what you think of the scoreboard. Owen knows this as a Chiefs fan. Asked Chiefs fans what they thought of Clark Hunt before they got Andy Reid, and then they got Alex Smith, and then they got Patrick Mahomes. There was definitely a different thought with that ownership group at that time. It all comes down to whether or not you're winning. And in a lot of ways, it should. It should. Because that's how you're measured in sports, is by what you do as far as winning is concerned. I don't think that this is a bad thing in one way. It can be seen as, it can be seen as meddlesome. However, you're 3-14. I'm not going to get the temperature of any of my veterans. I mean, Myles Garrett openly talked about on that Friday, well, I might consider playing somewhere else. I would hope that Jimmy Haslam might go ahead and have a conversation with Myles Garrett, considering everybody's long history with one another here. I would hope that my owner goes and, let's talk here for a moment here. I would hope the owner steps in. I can't defend a guy who's 3-14 and has a slew of bad contracts, as Zach mentioned yesterday afternoon on Afternoon Drive, and has a huge bad contract that, again, we're celebrating possible insurance outs because of that contract to get us out of that contract a little bit sooner than what some of us thought. I mean, this is not a good situation. That's not a defense.
Well, if it's not Jimmy, then it's just the other guys you don't like right now. It's Andrew Berry,
Kevin
Stefanski.
But they don't like the owner for keeping those guys in employed, yeah. Which I have a different theory about
that. What percentage?
Well, I have an alternate theory about that.
What percentage of the fan base right now do you think would have just preferred a house cleaning? New coach, new GM.
85%.
You think it's that high?
Yeah,
See, I don't think it's that high.
I do.
I think I still think there are a lot of fans who they think that we were very unlucky last year. They think there were a bunch of injuries again, that they think we've been riddled with that. And they also think that stability is something that we should champion, as opposed to the old days when it was every other year we were looking for either a head coach, either a GM, or both.
I think that's 15%. And my theory I kind of pass around is, maybe I want to share this here in a second, but I'll share it now. I want to play Nick's reaction. I want to play what Zach said about it, because Nick seemed to have a negative reaction to it. Zach had a more of a measured positive reaction to it, and I want to see where everybody else is on it. And do you think Jimmy Haslam sitting in on exit interviews is a bad thing? 216-474-0092. I didn't think it was a bad thing. But I got to know, do you believe there's a path, a realistic path, other than it's the NFL, that the Browns go back to the playoffs in 2025? Off the top of your head, do you believe that there's a realistic path?
Yeah.
You do believe there's a realistic path, other than it's the NFL?
No, that was my path.
Okay,
32 teams can believe that.
That's not a realistic path. That's a hope. That's not a path.
Yeah, but I don't think it's... If you told me next year they made the playoffs, I wouldn't be gobsmacked.
No, you would.
Like, yeah, that's how the league works. It's six teams every year that aren't in the playoffs go to the playoffs the next year. We just saw Washington go to the playoffs. It's like Houston a year before.
But you would say it's unlikely. Like, it was unlikely for Washington to take Jaden Daniels and go right to the playoffs. That's an unlikely thing.
Yeah, it's hard. I'm not trying to get you on the finer print. It's just
fine.
Seven teams make the playoffs. It's relatively easy these days to make the playoffs.
Okay, but I mean, we just assume that most teams that make the playoffs are decent franchises that aren't going to fire everybody and things like that. I can't imagine that Jimmy Haslam saying, this thing can absolutely be fixed this coming. I mean, we just talked about the quarterback's contract, the albatross. He could be thinking, and this is part of this, guys, is everybody in the NFL is telling him, I mean, again, watch the Browns broadcast. Go back on NFL Plus and watch the Browns broadcast. Those color analysts, to a man, stand there and talk about how great Kevin Stefanski is while they're getting throttled. While they're getting throttled. We have Albert Breer, who comes in, who knows everybody. We've had other insiders who come on in, and they know everybody, and they say, Andrew Berry, if you let him go right now, it would be a major mistake. He would be hired in moments by another football team. Jimmy Haslam's hearing the same thing. Remember, this is a guy who listened to Joe Banner once, and he hired Rob Chudzinski, fired him after a year because they were going to go on some whim that they were going to hire Jim Harbaugh, who would leave football before he'd play for the Cleveland Browns, or before he coached for the Cleveland Browns. He listened to him at one point, and Jimmy knows that he was ridiculed at that point. He's looking at the Raiders being made fun of right now for firing Antonio Pierce after 1 year. He sees the Patriots being made fun of right now and looking like a listless franchise and what's going on with the Jets. And he's thinking, well, there's got to be at least some stability in this. And there's also one other thought to it. Zach came on yesterday afternoon, Jackson, and you can go back and listen to that interview, 92.3thefan.com, and he says you have a bunch of bad contracts. And, of course, you have the Deshaun Watson contract, right? It's more unlikely than it is likely that you will not make the playoffs in 2025. It's more likely you won't make the playoffs. If he knows that, wouldn't he go, why make a change now when I have these bad contracts still? I have this quarterback. We're not through the woods yet. We could find out that he's going to be. He had a setback, but he's going to be fine, and he's going to start the season. Like, we could always find that out. I know Mary Kay said if he has surgery again, he's definitely not going to pretty much play in 2025. But you get what I'm saying. I don't know that yet. So he's thinking, wouldn't this be a much more attractive position getting ready for 2026 to a new general manager and to a new head coach? I brought this up before.
It's
like with
really
college football,
dangerous, though, with the second pick in the draft.
I understand that.
Really dangerous.
I totally get that. But you could, and if you, like, there's people who do not want a quarterback. Okay, well, if you think your owner's meddlesome, do you want him to stand by and let them draft a quarterback that you don't want? Do you want that to happen? Like, we pick and choose when we want our owners to step in.
Yeah, I just think if you're even thinking about making a change, you have to just make the change because of what's at stake. But, I saw one of the draft sites said the Browns have the greatest value of draft capital of anybody else in the NFL.
Yes,
you're going to give that to somebody.
Joe Shad pointed that out.
You're even if you're mulling it over, you got to just make the change.
But I understand that. But this is a man who's had to learn the hard way over the last decade that leadership does matter, front office and head coach. By what I just gave you, the examples I just gave you. So it's almost a college football where it's like, hey. We got a tough schedule coming up next year. We still have a big buyout on this guy. Let's let, like, Arkansas thought this way, and then they ended up winning some football games. Let's let Sam Pittman take the losses, and then we'll find someone else. It's a big buyout. We can wait. Let's let somebody else take the losses, and then we'll find somebody else. Like, that might be how he's thinking here. Because this is not, if you were to open up this job right now, how attractive is this job with the five other jobs, or six other jobs that would be open right now? How attractive are the Browns in comparison to even the Bears? The Bears have a rookie quarterback that did. I know that people are down on him, but I thought he played decently well with the situation that was handed to him. His numbers aren't terrible. His numbers are not terrible. The Jets are a bad, bad, bad situation. Okay, great. We're down in the gutter with the Jets. I mean, this is not a good spot compared
to the Jets. The Browns and the Jets do have some premier players, so maybe you hang your hat on that.
Maybe you do, but again, we're kind of down there in the mud, and this is not a really good spot right now. Next year, okay, we would probably not finish very good. We'd have a higher draft pick. We would have maybe some more capital.
I don't know, though. Would that draft capital that you talked about, would that make this a very, very interesting job for a candidate?
Yeah. For a general manager and a head coach? Yeah. Yeah. This guy gave Kevin Stefanski, because you'd come in and go, he gave Kevin Stefanski 6 years. Stefanski did a good job. By next year, if things don't work out, we're not going to hear Troy Aikman get on national television and say all these great things about Kevin Stefanski. It ain't going to go that way next year. It ain't going to happen. So it's either A, Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry get the nose up on this thing, and maybe they take a rookie quarterback, or maybe they bring in a veteran, and that veteran takes them to close to 500 or gets them back in the playoffs. That'd be great. I would love it. I pray for it. But if they don't, this is a more attractive position in 2026 than it is in 2025. This is more attractive for anybody out there who you would want to bring in that would be quality. That would be somebody that you would say, let me give you another at least, I want to shoot for a decade with you. Like they've shot for a decade with Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski. And for the better part, now we're going to go over half a decade with both of them. 6 years, that's not a bad run in the NFL. It's not a bad run. So maybe he's thinking that way. Well, that I don't get, because he wanted Kevin Stefanski fired, right? Those two guys, they wanted.
I'm not
the afternoon boys.
I'm not positive on that.
All right, but did Nick? Nick wanted him gone.
I don't know. I heard yesterday Nick talked about the accountability thing. He addressed what we had brought up about that, and I didn't hear him say that he thought Stefanski should have been fired.
Okay, well, if most people want him to be fired, wouldn't you want your owner to step in and make a decision? Because no one's going to fire the head coach and general manager but the owner of the football team. That's how this goes.
And then they, if you don't trust the owner, then you'd, what? You'd want him to bring in the search firm? You know, do the search firm thing?
That's always fun. Corn Ferry, let's get it
There's
going
no
again.
There's no great way to do this. I mean, we all do realize this. Eventually, the owner has to sign off on
the owner that
these.
Had a search firm and they told you to draft this quarterback and then they didn't draft that quarterback. They draft a different quarterback.
So we can't just sit there and say we're mad. People are mad, but I have to have some reasoning of how to make it better. I can't just sit here for the next 4 months and say Brown's bad, Brown's bad, Brown's bad. I gotta try to figure out with you and everybody listening a way to dig out of this situation and to make this situation better. Because I can't just spin my wheels and say that they're bad. And I can't just get mad at Jimmy Haslam for trying to improve the football team that he owns. If he sat with veterans, if he's sitting there with Deshaun Watson going, Deshaun, how do I fix this football team? Yeah, you know what? I'd be pretty terrified. I'd be pretty nervous about it. But if you're sitting there with Rodney McLeod, who's on his way out, that can tell every single truth of how he sees now because he's going to retire in the NFL, yeah, I'd like to hear this. I'd like to hear from a veteran who's been on a team that's won a Super Bowl, that's been on a bad organization before, that was getting ready to move St. Louis, that played for a Super Bowl team and is now exiting his career with us, who at one point played for Jeff Saturday as a head coach. I would like to hear Rodney's opinion on that if I owned a football team. Is that so bad?
Yeah, here's one of the big problems that anytime I'm listening to national guys talk about the Browns, They just say we have a bad owner. Like I heard it yesterday. Middlecoff was on with Coward, and he's like going over the good owners and the bad owners and all the good owners who all happen to have good quarterbacks. And, you know, it's chicken or the egg. Is it because they have good owners that they have good quarterbacks, or did they just luck themselves into good quarterbacks and the quarterbacks made them into good owners? You know how we feel about that. We feel that even the worst owner in the world could luck into Patrick Mahomes. I know people have told us over the last few days that we would ruin Patrick Mahomes had he been drafted here.
You feel Jim Irsay's a good owner?
But overall...
What do people think of Jim Irsay when he had Peyton Manning?
And they've won more than we've won.
Exactly.
You know?
You have a good quarterback, you usually think you have a good owner.
But I can't escape the fact that every national guy, and that's why it was interesting to hear Albert Breer yesterday, every national guy just chalks up the Browns to having bad ownership. So because we have bad ownership, it's like we're destined to never be good. What are we supposed to every day just say we have a bad owner and say let's talk
Throw
something
up our
else
hands and that's it?
Yeah, okay. Like we're in the weeds here. Like they just come in, they parachute in, they talk about us for 2 minutes, and then they move on to the next thing. But we're sitting here. We're not going to get the owner to sell the team. You know, we talk about that in baseball all the time. We're not just going to be able to do that. So we're going to talk about our situation. Our situation is we have some good players, just like every NFL team. We are in a little bit of trouble, I think, despite what some of the cap bros say. I do think we're in some trouble because we do have contractual situations that are going to be tough for us to have the same amount of cap availability mm-hmm. that other teams do. But we do have an owner that'll spend. He'll spend to get out of it as much as humanly possible.
At least we got that going for us. 216-474-0092. They don't even have that in Cincinnati. Let's get to Tyler and Rocky River. You're first up on the Fan. Hello, Tyler.
Good morning, y'all. How you doing?
Doing well. Go on ahead.
So,
hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
I think Haslam definitely needs to step out of the football organization. Just take a step back. You're an owner. You don't have the football knowledge that Barry, Stefanski, Belichick, any of these coaches, any of these GMs around the league, he doesn't have that. He's not in there day to day, and he shouldn't be. You should be using this as an investment. Step back. I think he's causing more problems. Secondly, this year I'm a season ticket member, and I've been getting constant surveys throughout the year, thoughts on the team, thoughts on the new stadium, this and that. But the weird one I got was last night. I looked at it this morning. And it was asking about my favorite player and whatnot. I feel like he's trying to use this information to see who he wants to keep, who he wants to cut, stuff like that. It's just, I think he's too involved. He's the reason Sean's here. I mean, if I'm not wrong, he's been heavily involved in a lot of that. And it's just, I don't know.
All right, stay with me here, Tyler. What do you think of Pauly Modesta?
I don't like him.
Well, if Jimmy steps away, guess who's going to make your football decisions and all your football decisions?
I think Jimmy should fire him and then also sell the team.
So you want Jimmy to step in? Well, wait a minute. By the way, you'll just get another billionaire you don't like. You can count on one hand throughout the history of sports owners that are well liked, and most of the guys who are actually liked are probably passed away. So if you had Jimmy goes, you know what? That's fine. I'm going to go and I'm going to hang out in Tennessee and I'm just going to hang out with my family and that's okay. Pauly Modesta is going to be in charge. You don't even like him,
right? Did you like Lerner? Did you like the Lerner ownership when we got to Randy?
Randy didn't do anything.
Yeah, Randy gave it to the football guys.
When he ran out of the room and went and hired Eric Mangini, who's not a bad coach.
I'm just saying, Haslam needs to get Paul out. I think Paul's a common denominator, common problem. And then Haslam just needs to step back.
So you want him to do exactly what you want him to do and then step back?
Yes. He needs to. Okay. There's common denominators here, right?
Tyler's smiling. Tyler, you know this doesn't make too terribly much sense right now.
As an owner, right, you see a common denominator. There's two common denominators. There's Paul, and then there's you stepping in. Yeah. Every time, am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean, hey, in a perfect world, Tyler, thank you for the call. Like, yeah, I guess you would step in and get rid of Paul and then step away. But you got to replace Paul with somebody.
Well, I just can't get past.
Do you bump up Andrew Berry?
We have had plenty of reasons to call the Haslam ownerships meddlers in the past. But what most people around the league have said about Haslam and how he deals with the team now? Very differently from how they talked about him 4 years ago. Yeah. They still might think he's a bad owner, but they talk about how it is not as hands-on. Yes, every owner in every sport is going to ultimately sign off on the big-ticket items. That's how it works.
Here's Albert Breer. Well, yeah, and because he signed off on the big-ticket item of Deshaun Watson, I can't sit there and say he's the world's greatest owner. Here is Albert Breer yesterday on the Haslams and how they've grown as an owner.
I would give the Haslam some credit. I do think like they've grown up as owners. I think they were down near the bottom at the beginning and had a lot of learning to do and went through, you know, a lot of fits and starts. And I think for a long time they didn't know what they wanted the organization to be, going back and forth and back and forth between different models and the place that analytics had in the organization. And they were like a lot of like owners that come in and have run their own businesses. And it's like, you know, we're gonna be the Microsoft of pro football. And so how do you find the balance from being advanced versus like just doing it in a performative way where it's too much? And I think that's one reason why, even when things didn't look great this year, they were really committed to sticking with the guys they have, because I think they found a model they really like, and it took them a long time to get there. Doesn't mean that Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are going to be in place forever, but I think they've done a lot right. Would I put them there with the Rooneys and the Maras and the Jerry Joneses and the Krafts? No, but like, you know, I think that they've made a lot of progress and they've become good, solid owners. And I think it's reflected in the way that they haven't overreacted to things over the last couple of years as they've happened.
And I think that's fair. You can hear more of that at 92.3thefan.com. He was on with the guys in the afternoon yesterday, as he is every Tuesday. I can't fault them for trying to learn from their previous mistakes. I brought up the Joe Banner thing in the first segment. The reason these guys are still here, part of the reason they'd still be here, I mean, I got the whole thing about 2026. I don't know if that's true. It's a thought. But I would assume the reason that these guys are still here, they don't want to go back to Joe Banner land. Hiring and firing and then getting rid of this guy and that guy and bumping up Ray Farmer, then getting rid of Ray Farmer. You don't want to go back there. And fans shouldn't want them to go back there. So you're going to go a little bit further and see. You're going to go a little bit longer instead of going too short. Ryan and Elyria, you're next up on the Fan.
Guys, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I don't see it as a negative for him sitting in the exit interviews. I mean, I think he's trying to get this thing right. I think, you know, it's obvious he's taking swings for the fences, trying to get Deshaun Watson. I mean, how much money is our team this year? You know, he's not afraid to spend the money. I think he wants to know from these veterans what's going on, because I think he wants to get it right.
I think that if you can get information from a player's perspective, and especially a guy who has no reason to not tell you the truth, Ryan, and thank you very much for the call, I think that it's the right decision to sit down with a guy like Rodney, who, again, has been through the good and the bad and the very, very ugly in his NFL career and has come out on the other end and is going to draw a pension from this league and had a nice 13-year career and got a ring out of it and everything. I mean, it's the perfect scenario that you'd want. I would want his perspective on things. Because Rodney's, I'm sure there's things that Rodney didn't tell us off air or on air that they will evaluate in this offseason about Kevin, about the coaches who are staying, about the type of coaches that they'd like to bring in, the type of people that are in the locker room, other players. Not like he's being stooged out and telling bad things about others, but the truth, the unvarnished truth about people who may be in positions of power within the organization. I think that's only the fair thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Before I get to this point about Deshaun Watson not scaring you into making this situation worse, because I think people are a little bit afraid because of the drama that they've dealt with over the last 3 years, and you know, rightfully so, they have the right to be afraid. You made the point before the show. Tommy Rees is interviewing for the offensive coordinator. You went, I don't care. And I went, yeah. Oh, okay, tell me why. I think I might agree with you. I don't really know where you're going, but go ahead.
Yeah, I get, you know, you want to have good offensive coordinators. You want to have, you know, all of that in place because as we saw this year, when you don't, when you have mixed messaging, when you have someone, and they called Ken Dorsey out the door, a really good football coach, but you can see it wasn't a fit from day one, and it only made the things that were bad about the Browns offense even worse. I don't care, because Stefanski's going to be calling the plays next year. He's going to be the offensive coordinator. He's going to go back to the exact same role that he had, you know, the year before. I'd be shocked if it were anything different from that. So I guess I'd ask anybody else, convince me why I'm supposed to get upset or really happy about an internal hire or somebody externally.
You want me to try to excite you?
Well, just, I mean,
no.
Do you think it's noteworthy that if they were to call up Rees?
Well, if Kevin's just going to go back to calling plays, then no.
Yeah.
It's not.
I mean, we'll still talk to the offensive coordinators on Fridays of game week, but, right?
Won't. They have the media availability. Thursdays or Fridays?
Yeah, Thursdays or
mixes.
When was it this year that Dorsey talked?
I don't know. The season
on
just
Thursdays.
Ended last week. I already forgot. He talked on Thursdays? Okay.
On Thursdays.
Thursdays with Ken.
That's why we had to get out of the podcast
earlier. That's right, because he would talk on Thursdays. That's true.
But in the end, like, we all can agree that the offense not only regressed, they couldn't even get lined up. So what did Stefanski do this year? And I'm not absolving Stefanski. God, Andrew Berry basically threw him under the bus for hiring Ken Dorsey to begin with. What happened this year with the offense? They couldn't even get lined up.
Yeah.
The motion stuff was a disaster. It was a total disaster. We knew the NFL was going to pay a little closer attention to the motion stuff this year, and the Browns committed more of those penalties than anybody else. So it seemed like we got the worst out of the situation. We not only lost the stuff that Stefanski did really well, it kind of felt like Stefanski was rudderless the entire year. Because the stuff he did really well, he wasn't even really in charge of.
You know what? I thought I might disagree with you to some level because they're all supposed to be important decisions, but I think you're right. You want the right guy just because you don't want him to get in the way. I think Ken ended up getting in the way. And if Kevin's the one who is making these decisions, which again, you said he didn't want to make the decision to fire Alex mm-hmm. Van Pelt in the first place. So if Kevin's the one who's making the decisions, does he get a guy who's more like Alex Van Pelt, or should I be worried that Kevin could hire another guy that is going to make this offense even worse? Should I worry about that? Because now if Kevin's making these decisions, then yes, my confidence has to be shaken naturally in Kevin. I can't keep making excuses for the guy. So I have to be shaken in my confidence of who he hires.
Now also, I think Breer said that you should keep your eye on Vrabel plucking Rees from the staff. So either way, I'm not going to get married to any of these guys because it's going to be Kevin Stefanski. By the way, I wouldn't be demoralized. I wouldn't be like, darn it, we lost a good one. Guys, it's Stefanski's offense. Just let him go back to doing it. It's where this team excelled the most.
I think your bigger hire is going to be the offensive line coach. That's your bigger hire. I don't think your offensive coordinator, if Kevin goes back to calling plays, that's great, but your offensive line coach is going to be instrumental. I think that they are going to, whoever they bring in, I think they're going to go back to the offense of what they had before because it's the one that wins the most games in the regular season. You can line up, and if you run the ball effectively, you will win games in the regular season and approach the playoffs. You're doing a lot of things in job savior mode. Also, you want to make sure that if you bring in a quarterback, and I'm going to bring this up here in a second, you bring in a veteran, you're going to want to protect him. You bring in a rookie, you damn sure better protect that guy. And so your offensive line has to be playing at a high level. Your offensive line wasn't playing at a high level. That was a mess last year. I wasn't even on air to be able to talk about the whole Mike Vrabel taking over the offensive line at one point last year. I mean, that's ridiculous. So your offensive line coach is going to be a bigger hire than your offensive coordinator. Hell yeah. It's a bigger position. It's a bigger name position, the offensive coordinator. Your old line guy is going to be the bigger one. That's the one that Browns fans should be paying attention to. Don't let Deshaun Watson scare you. Don't let it happen. We got a long time. I'll be short about this because I want to talk Cavs at 7. Peterlin made a hell of a point yesterday that I love. Credit where it's due. I know we all take swings at each other with us and the guys in the afternoon. Peterlin went on a diatribe about one quarterback in particular, and I loved what he had to say.
Jordan Reed today, he came out with his mock draft, and he had the Browns taking Shedeur Sanders at number 2. And in this, he says, Sanders is an ideal fit in Kevin Stefanski's offense as his game centers around his polish as a pocket passer. And you go a little bit deeper into it, right, and you see all the numbers he had as far as his completion percentage. He was the most accurate quarterback in the FBS all of last year. He completed 74% of his passes. Like, I don't think we give him enough credit for how accurate of a passer he is. He sits in the pocket. He doesn't improvise in any sort of magnificent way. If I were to tell you that there was a quarterback that would fit ideally into Kevin Stefanski's offense is a wildly accurate passer, and the comps that I read was Joe Burrow, and in another spot, Joe Burrow meets CJ Stroud, you'd say sign me up for that today. And so in my eyes, there is one that is so clearly a Kevin Stefanski quarterback, and that is Shedeur Sanders, that if you went with Cam Ward, it would be taking a quarterback to take a quarterback, because that guy just improvises. It doesn't fit Stefanski's system the exact same way, but the more and more I look at it, the more and more I see Shedeur Sanders being a perfect fit for Stefanski.
I went, damn, because I like Cam Ward, because I think he could take some hits, and I think that he's elevated every program he's played for, and I've said that a bunch. I did not put that together about Shedeur Sanders. I didn't. And I think that the fear of what's gone on over the last 3 years with the drama that's played out with Deshaun Watson has scared anybody about Shedeur Sanders. Because anytime anybody brings up Shedeur Sanders, you can't talk about him without talking about the old man. And they are polarizing people, the Sanders family. You either love him or you hate him. There's no third direction. But let me tell you this, why he... I'm going to take Jonathan a step further and say, I could see why this would fit. We got a long time to talk about it. I'm not sold on it yet. But I'm saying this is why I see he could fit. Shedeur Sanders, from the years at Jackson State to now Colorado, how many people have been praying for his downfall? Praying for it. All the types of rumors that they say are made up about they can't play the Colorado fight song after he scores a touchdown. They got to play some song that he sang or something like that, which I don't believe is true. But these are things that are made up about this guy. Is there any quarterback that would be more suited to handle the pressure of being the franchise quarterback for the Browns, who haven't had a franchise quarterback? I mean, they might have had one for a couple of years, but then we all know how that went down. Who haven't had a franchise quarterback since Bernie Kosar? Is there any quarterback that's more ready to handle the pressure of being the quarterback of the Browns than Shedeur Sanders? Because like Drew Aller, I know the rumors that are coming out about him, and I go, he's not ready to be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. The Browns are not ready to handle him. He needs another year of seasoning. I love the kid. I hope the very best for him. But for the Browns and for him, this is not the very best place for him.
You're talking more intangibles and tangibles.
I'm talking about if he can work within Kevin Stefanski's system. Jonathan just laid it out, the blueprint of that he could. You know, we all get nervous about, oh my God, his dad wears sunglasses on the sidelines and he's prime time. This guy's ready for this pressure. He had a whole country rooting either for him, Harden, or against him. And most of them were rooting against him in college football. They wanted him to fail. They wanted this experiment to fail at Colorado. Colorado's not been a good program since Coach Mack? The Browns haven't been a good football organization since Marty? Look at the things that they have in common. Cleveland Browns football.
That's interesting.
The pressure that's on both.
I didn't think about the pressure at all. I just figured any quarterback coming into a bad situation is going to have pressure.
But I want to know who's more ready to deal with that, because Baker admitted himself he wasn't ready for everything that he was given. Jimmy gave him way too much, and he wasn't ready for that, and Baker's admitted that, everybody, so I don't even want to hear it.
I'm more worried about the tangibles with Shedeur. I'm worried about the arm. How he's going to play in these conditions if he can't throw those out routes.
It snows in Colorado.
I know we had yesterday, Rodney McLeod brought up the issues Tua has being able to hit throws because of the arm. And I kind of go back, and I've seen some pro comps for Tua, even though he's taller. Mm-hmm. but I've seen some of the same comps.
I worry about how he's slight, his build. I think that he can't take off because he'd better be protected. But if we're talking about a Kevin Stefanski system, and if Kevin Stefanski's going to run this system this year, if you're thinking quarterback, yeah. Yeah. Because this is a guy who, yeah, I know everybody wants to talk about his dad, how much of a distraction dad is, and guys talking about Deshaun Watson compared to talking about Shedeur Sanders, that's night and day. Get me talking about Shedeur Sanders and arguing about whether or not he can do it any day, anytime, anywhere over what we've just talked about over the last 3 years. I will take it and I will run. I'm not taking and running up with the card right now. But if we're talking about a guy who can play within Kevin Stefanski's system, as Jonathan laid out, and a guy who's ready for the pressure of trying to resurrect this franchise from this storm cloud that hangs over the franchise, might be that guy who's had already a ton of pressure on him over the last 4 years in college.